Welcome to the Hands in Motion podcast, brought to you by the American Society of Hand Therapists. Here we will discuss all things upper extremity therapy, from assessment to treatment, the latest research, the patient experience, and other topics related to the field of upper extremity rehab. Learn more and subscribe today at asht.org.
This episode of Hands in Motion is sponsored by the Indiana Hand to Shoulder Center, a private hand surgery and hand therapy practice recognized across the world for its specialization in problems and injuries of the upper extremity. The Indiana Hand to Shoulder Center is hosting a conference this May. Hand Care 2024 is geared towards the practicing clinician with a special interest in hand and upper extremity rehabilitation, with the goal of advancing the practice of hand therapy and quality of patient care. This three-day course includes lectures, research, anatomy and orthotics labs, panel discussions with therapists and surgeons, state-of-the-art exhibits, and of course, some fun. Join us May 16th through the 18th in Noblesville, Indiana. For more information and to register for the conference, visit our website at www.handcareconference.com. Welcome back to another episode of Hands in Motion. On this episode, we are joined by Kim Pace, an occupational therapist who specializes in industrial rehabilitation. She shares with us what her role is in returning clients back to their jobs after injury. We discuss how she evaluates clients and ensures that they are ready to return to their job, if modifications might be necessary, or if another job might be more suitable based on their functional abilities. Welcome to Hands in Motion, Kim.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Hands in Motion. And we have Kim Pace with us here today, and we're going to be discussing a little bit about the return to work process and how upper extremity injuries, what happens after they leave traditional hand therapy and continue their journey on into work hardening and work conditioning. So, Kim, tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're currently working and what you do.
I currently work at a facility called Modus Rehabilitation. It's basically hands and upper extremity, but we also have physical therapy, one physical therapist. So there are other body parts, which I will also work on those for going back to work. I've been with this company for 22 years. I'm lucky enough to work with 15 specialists, hand and orthopedic. There are doctors at every one of our 9 clinics at all times. So we're able to go back and forth between the doctor and the therapist and the patient almost any time we want for consultation. I have been an occupational therapist for 42 years. Initially, I started in the area of psychiatry. After 8 years, then I ventured into the industrial rehab setting. And that's where I've been now for the last 34 years of my career.
Our listeners may not know the process on how you begin to transition from hand therapy into work hardening. At what point do you feel it's appropriate to make that referral, that transition?
I have a lot of new therapists, so I feel like I'm helping them learn a new path. And I ask them, this day they do the initial eval, they should already be thinking about discharge. And you have an injured worker, and we work with a lot of workman's comp and auto. Okay, so when you have workman's comp and auto, their goal and what they're responsible for is getting the person back to their previous level of functioning. Okay, so whatever that might be, work-related. And now I'm in Michigan and insurance is different everywhere. Sometimes you may only get 6 visits. You may get 8 visits. So I try to get them to start from day one looking at what does this person need to do to go back to work. I'm also in a heavy industry area. We have a lot of catastrophic injuries. We have degloving. We have amputations. We have a lot of heavy duty injuries in our area, I feel. Mm-hmm.
So when you're assessing the patient, where do you begin? What does your evaluation process look like?
Once I get the referral to come over, sometimes already worked with the patient, and then we're waiting on authorization to get them sent over to the work program. So lots of times I'll say to my patient, can you just stand up and show me what you do, whether or not they're holding on to something, because people will be explaining. A lot of people have process jobs, welding jobs, jobs with cycle time. So then I will watch what they do, and I'm watching maybe that hand or that upper extremity and what's going on there. What do they have to do? Are they pinching? Are they grasping? Are they holding? What are the things that they're doing, you know, and then start to look into those things as they show me maybe what they're doing. And then as I get them farther into the program, it's a matter of really getting into what do they do? How much forceful grip do they need? Do they need sustained grip? May they have to push, they have to pull, they have to weight bear. I'm going through a whole list here, fingering, pinching. Do they have amputations? So I'm looking at that. What is going on with that? Fine motor skill, manual dexterity. Are they dealing with numbness and tingling? That's not going to go away. What are some of those things? What is their work setting? Is it cold? Is it hot? Is it well lit? Is vision occluded? You have a mechanic and he's going to stick his hand into a motor and he can't see what he's doing and his hand is numb. Those are all things that, because I've been doing it for so long, they just start automatically going through my head. Do they wear gloves at work? Can they wear gloves? If they can't wear gloves, is it repetitive? How much lifting are they doing? Is there cycle time? I'm in the auto industry, and right now, most plants are putting out 600 cars in a 10-hour shift, which means 60 cars an hour. So that person is doing one thing per minute, whatever that one job might be. Sometimes it's four bolts with a gun in 1 minute. Okay. And if they don't keep up their part of the job, it can cause a problem in the line. Okay. So the line could get backed up and it could cause other people to get in trouble. So sometimes I think if you're not safe for yourself or for others, do people work alone or they work with a partner? So you have a hand injury and you have to lift 50 pounds and the other person's lifting 50. What happens if you can't do your 50 and you let go? You're going to hurt yourself or possibly your partner that you're working with. So I'm looking at a lot of things at one time, and then I start to get them in the program. And then when I get them in the program, I do a lot of job simulation as best as possible. I'll get parts from any company I can get parts from. Sometimes they'll bring things. Sometimes I'll go pick them up. Sometimes clients will bring them in for me, and then I can use the actual things in there. I am close to the metro airport, so I've done a lot of baggage handling. So I have a lot of suitcases there. We've done people from the Red Wings. So we've worked with holding on to the puck. We work with people from the symphony. So we've had people come in with their instruments. So we've done lots of things like that, where it's some job simulation at the same time working with their hand injury.
Wow, there's so many things that you have to take into consideration and the variety of jobs that are out there that you have to have a wide breadth of knowledge on how to assess these. You alluded to this briefly with like the suitcases. Tell us a little bit about what your clinic looks like. I bet it looks very different than mine. What does your clinic setup look like?
My clinic, according to my boss, is a mess. And I'll say it's not. I work here and I only have so much room. So whatever, like I said, whatever I can get, I have a whole area with kitchen supplies. Okay. Because we get a lot of people from the cooking industry. Then I'll have the whole baggage thing. Then I have a lot of truck drivers. Then I'll use a system so I can practice a three-point climb, which is a big thing for people getting in and out of their truck. Lately, I've done a new thing where I'm going on site for their last therapy visit, and the last two trucking companies have been great. I meet them on site, let them ride the truck on site. So I watch everything from the pre-check of all the oil and setting everything up, getting in the cab, getting themselves in, pulling themselves in. Then I know at that point that they can go back to work safely. So if I can go to a job and actually have the person do it their last day of therapy, then that's what I've been doing lately and just charging regular in the system. Since COVID, we've had a hard time getting back into some companies to do work sites. People aren't working like they used to. So some things are very different from having to do that.
Before COVID, was that pretty common that you were able to, and that was like the ideal situation that you could actually get in there and see kind of their discharge visit? I need to put my eyes on your process and what it truly looks like, not in a simulated environment in your clinic, but actually at their work site. Was that something that you had access to do pretty regularly?
Yes, I did. And I went a lot and I would video. And like I said, I've been doing this a long time. Initially, I had the great big video that you had to put on your shoulder with like an eight crack or whatever. So now it's nice that I can take just my phone. And the nice part about videoing is when I come back to the clinic, I can get together with the doctor right away and we can watch the video together and we can see what's going on and try to get the person back to work. And then with all of this, of course, you try to get the person back to their regular job if possible. If that doesn't happen, can they go back with restrictions? can you make some kind of adaptations, possibly with some gloves? We have access to an industrial sewing machine. So we've had gloves before for people. We put rubber inside of their glove. So we've been able to do a lot of things to get people back to their jobs as best as we can.
So I know you do the job simulation part. Do you include, and I know a lot of different work hardening or industrial rehab programs are a little bit different, but do you include an overall strength and endurance part of the program as well, where they're trying to increase their cardio? Because a lot of times these patients are out for a while, so they're a little bit deconditioned. Is that part of your program as well?
Yes. Once they're in the program, then they have access to a stationary bike, an elliptic, a treadmill. They'll do all that conditioning, and then we do all kinds of exercises. I have a whole set of material handling tasks, a right-hand carry, a left-hand carry, a two-hand carry, waist-to-chest, waist-to-floor. Then we have what's called a BTE. It stands for Baltimore Therapeutic Equipment. Not many clinics have these. It's one of a very good piece of equipment for strengthening the hand. And as some of you know, you can simulate things on this BTE machine. It's hard to explain, but it's computerized, and then you can increase the torque as the person is getting stronger. So you can always challenge the patient, client, to keep on going for hand strengthening, turning a doorknob, steering wheel. So I have a lot of my truck drivers sit on there and drive. You know, they may have to go around with the steering wheel, depending if they have a shoulder injury or elbow, you know, or hand. So you can spend a lot of time on the BTE. I think a lot of times the men like it because it's something different. It's like going to the gym. It's not like some other types of therapy that they might have had.
Yeah. And I love that piece of machinery as well. Like if you need somebody doing a lot of overhead simulation tasks or have them laying on the floor doing like they're simulating going under the car working. So you can kind of move that head in so many different positions and just target each task individually. It's pretty cool. And then adjust the resistance as needed. Yeah.
And then when they come to therapy, it can be anywhere from 2 to 5 times a week. Anywhere from 2 hours to 8 hours. I had a doctor order a fireman to come every day for 8 hours for 2 weeks. It's hard for a fire person because of their schedule. Some days they go to work and they may not have a big day, so they may not be doing a lot. So he said if he can handle therapy every day for 8 hours for 2 weeks, no matter what comes up at work, the doctor said he should be ready to go back to work. So it was interesting to have someone for an 8-hour day. They used to do 8-hour days a long time ago, I'll say. But money-wise, no one wants to pay for 8 hours of therapy.
Right. I was going to say we started 2 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours. But maybe, what was that, 15, 20 years ago, they kind of started weaning that out. So insurances didn't want to pay for the length of time.
Then you can have the person, like with the firefighters, will have them bring in their gear. And then towards the end of therapy, they'll wear their gear to the therapy to see how they can handle wearing their gear, their whole setup. Anyone who has a uniform of type thing or some kind of heavy duty stuff, they have to wear boots and whatever. We ask them to bring them into therapy and then they wear them while they're doing their stuff.
You mentioned that as you're teaching new therapists that you have them start thinking about discharge at day one. I think several of us, that's our ultimate goal with our patients. What does discharge look like? Or do you have standard measures that these, maybe from employment or from some regulatory board or whatnot, there might be standards that these patients or your clients are having to meet?
Well, when they get discharged from the acute OT hand area, lots of times I want to see if they can get as much range of motion as possible and as much strength as possible. Then after that, they need to continue for further strengthening. And that's when I get into the lifting. So if a person would come in and I know their job is 50 pounds of lifting and possibly they're only coming in at 20 pounds, then I know I have to get to that 50 pounds and you'll work on that. And if it's one-handed or if it's two-handed, every 10 sessions, I can do a reeval, see what their grip strength is doing, see if they're making any gains. And then it's a matter of working with the employer. I have a lot of times an employer will say they can't come back with any restrictions, which is very hard to return to someone that has to be 100%. When they have room for restrictions, it's more helpful. And then sometimes by the time they go back to work, they are much better. Or some companies have a ramp-in program for the first couple of weeks they're there. They give them a ramp-in session with an easier job, and then they slowly get over to their other job. Especially in the car company with so many lines to pick from, they can sometimes move them around, put them on an easier line. The problem with the line is the two-hand, repetitive, fast-paced nature of the job. And sometimes we don't feel the doctor understands what they really do. So we really have to push for that. I will write that in my notes all the time. It's something every minute with your hand, one hand, two hand, whatever it is very taxing on your body, depending on what your injury was. Sometimes it's convincing the insurance person, the adjuster, and the case manager that we need more time. It's very hard sometimes to get more therapy time as the person. They're making slow progress, but they have a long ways to go sometimes. And people sometimes don't understand. The person on the other end that's paying the bill doesn't understand what someone physically needs to do to go back to work. So sometimes it's very frustrating. So the other day I made a phone call to a case manager and asked her if I could think about putting this person in the work program. They weren't in yet. And the lady has an amputated thumb below the nail. And she said, well, it's just her thumb. I don't think she'll need work conditioning for just her thumb. So
we all know that's incorrect.
Yes. So it's very hard sometimes when the person on the other end is not really helpful. So sometimes we really have to work with our doctors. Our doctors are very good with our industry.
So you said you do get a lot of severe traumatic injuries that happen in the workplace. And what if you get somebody that you're like, I think they can go back to a job, but maybe not necessarily the job they did before. How do you identify what level they're able to work at or what capacity they're able to work at?
In the work conditioning program, I would know if it's getting towards the end and they say, you know, we're no more authorization, where are they at? So then I know what they've done in the clinic. So I can say 20 pounds of lifting frequently or occasionally or whatever. I also do functional capacity evaluations. So sometimes to close the workman's comp case, they will order a functional capacity evaluation. So like last week, I had a functional capacity evaluation on a man who had three fingers amputated in a snowblower accident. Okay, so it's a matter of now they want to know. He works landscaping, which is planting and landscaping through the good months. And in the other months, he's doing snow removal. Can he go back to his job? Is all they wanted to know. So, and I'd never seen the man before. He was only for an FCE. So in a 4-hour time span, I could go through everything. And because it was his dominant hand, then looking at all the jobs he does, like he couldn't pull the cord to start a lawnmower. There are a lot of things he was not going to be able to do. So at this point, I had to say that he would not be able to go back to that job. Then they can look into vocational rehabilitation or some rehab services to get him a different type of job.
What type of functional capacity assessment do you use?
The Eisenhagen was initial name and now it's called the Workwell. So that is the one that I do, is the Workwell system. So it has the history, the medical, all the measuring for all the hand and for the grip strength, for the pinch strength, for coordination. Then you do a right-hand carry, a left-hand carry, a two-hand carry, a waist-to-chest, a waist-to-floor, a push-pull, and then anything else that you want to do. If you have to squat, if you have to work overhead, and all the tests are designed with a certain amount of time in them. So then at the end, you can score that. Can the person do that rarely, occasionally, or frequently when they go back to work? And then if I get a good job description, then I can do the match to say these are the things they can do or the things that they can't do to have them go back to work.
That assessment process, I wanted to kind of take a step back to explain to the audience what that functional capacity evaluation entails, which you did well. But a lot of times you're entering that into the program system, correct? And then it doesn't spit it out and tell you, oh, but it gives you levels, correct? Like you still have to identify and make that assessment at what level they're able to perform.
Then there's a system to follow for. If they can do 20 pounds occasionally, they want to know what category they're in. If the jobs are decided at light, medium, heavy, or very heavy job. So when I get done with an FC, some of the doctors just want to know what level are they functioning at. So if you put them at a light level and their job was a medium level, they won't be able to go back to that job, but maybe they can look for another job in the company or somewhere on the outside.
That was going to be my question, is how that is applicable to a variety. I work with kids, so we aren't doing FCEs, so I don't see that. But can you use this one evaluation and then make more of a broad assessment specific to their job? And it sounds like you can, which is great that it can speak to a variety of activities. and job descriptions?
Yes, I've had younger people in it. It's a matter of sometimes their job is, like you said, going to school, or they may be into sports or whatever too. So, you know, it's a matter of what can we do to help this person be able to do what they want to do and need to be able to do. We have a lot of young athletes. I'm in Detroit, so we have the college kids who are playing football and other injuries. So they come through and let's see what can we do to get them back to that, to keep them on the team. So that's another way of looking at that. That is their job at the time. So there's so many different jobs. If we think of jobs, you realize what a job is. So when you're 9 years old, your job is to go to school and pick up your room or whatever. So a hand injury could keep you from doing that, or you can't even feed yourself or whatever possibly with the hand injuries.
I wouldn't have thought that. I just would have figured like, oh, an athlete goes kind of the sports route and stays that way. I wouldn't have thought that that would fall under work conditioning. But if that, I mean, that's pretty interesting. What might that look like in your setting?
Well, there's certain things that are hard to do, like tackling, altercations. Right now, I have a lot of law enforcement. It's very hard with the law enforcement to be able to simulate out in the public when you have to take someone down or you're getting into a physical altercation. It's very hard to find someone to use in the clinic as someone to wrestle with, okay? And then sometimes I have a young man now who doesn't want anything to do with using handcuffs in the clinic, okay? And I offered to take him in a separate room to do it. I didn't think he wanted anyone to see, and he said, I don't want anything to do with practicing this in a clinic. So I can't do that with him. Getting people to shoot a gun is another whole issue. I have to encourage my patients to go to the gun range. I've gone to the gun range with people before, but I'm not the one shooting the gun. So it's a whole different thing of how are they feeling that? And can they go back and be on the spot to pull a gun out and to use a gun as needed? So the wardens, the police officers, border patrol, a lot of those are really hard to make that final decision about, are they able to go back to work physically and safely? Sometimes we have to go on what the patient says. A lot of them have to go qualify. So if they pass qualifying while they're in therapy, then we know they made it through the gun part of it. But there's things every day you just don't know.
You mentioned that you also have a background in, or have worked in psychiatry as well. Do you find that there is a component to work hardening, work conditioning, where you do pull in that background as well?
Oh, yes. The part I call it is with the new people, I say, you know, he or she has an agenda. They don't understand what I mean when I said the agenda. So I'm on my way, maybe getting ready to retire. So I said, you guys had to learn how to do this because I'm not going to be here for 22 more years, you know? So I'm working on that. And they'll come and they'll say, you know, he's telling me this, this, and that. And I said, I told you he has an agenda. An agenda doesn't have to be negative. It could be a positive agenda. But there's times when people on workman's comp, they don't really want to go back to work. Okay. There's a reason for not going back to work. You're getting some secondary gains. You're home. You're getting paid. Your spouse may be doing the things that you always had to do before. So the psych part really plays in with, you need to go back to work. You know, you need productive part of society. Also, you need to find out you can't stay on workman's comp forever. Most of the time, workman's comp cases will close 2 or 3 years. Auto cases will close in Michigan 2 or 3 years. Okay, so you're going to have to look ahead. And I always tell my patients, you're not going to be a millionaire. I've never had anyone go to court and win the case. No, let's find out what you want to do or what you can do, what you need to do. A lot of times people don't like their job. So I say, well, let's try to get you back to what you did before. And then we need to look into something else you might be more interested in and help you look and venture out that way with the skills that you have.
What about for patients that there's a fear component? Maybe they were injured at work, or that there's some fear of going back to that, or that they have just some barriers to going back to that job. Is that something that you also could work on with them?
Yes, I do a lot of discussing of that. Go back to the scene, what happened, who was there to help you. I did have one lady with a terrible meat grinder accident, that she got her hand stuck in a meat grinder, and the thought of going in the building, she couldn't even go. We were lucky. That employer was so good. She used to do a phone system too of taking orders. They set everything up in her house before we did working from home like we do now. And they set everything up in her house. So to help her with that, sometimes I can get an employer to put them in a different department. nowhere near that machine, or they find out that machine now has a guard on it and it didn't have a guard on it before. I had a lady in the post office and she was on the 10th floor. So when she opened this door, the wind caught the door and then came back and smashed her hand. Well, it should have never happened. But since then, she knows there's a magnet on the door. So now when that door opens, they've fixed it and there's a magnet so that door can't come back. So if you go through that and you show them that the employer has made amends and is looking to change things and they're willing to work with you, then sometimes it helps. It doesn't always work. Sometimes people have had such a catastrophic injury that it doesn't work. We've had a lot of burn patients. It's very hard when you're burned at work to be able to want to go back to that job. But we try working on it. I will ask for psych consults. When I go to see the doctor, I'll ask them to refer them out for a psych consult. So we've done that before.
Yeah, that was my same exact question, Kara. Like, if these patients can't get back to work, how do you try to work in the clinic with them? But you gave us a good explanation, so thank you. What other areas, as far as I know, we discussed with getting those hand patients back to work? Now, this might be out of the scope here, but do you also treat patients with other injuries as well? Or are you primarily just upper extremity injuries? Like, I know our clinic sometimes will have back injuries, knee injuries, ankle injuries. So you get a conglomerate of all the extremities, not just upper extremity. Are you in a specialized area or?
I can treat all of those after they've done, I'll say, physical therapy, after they're done with acute physical therapy. So they would come to me just for work conditioning, just for an FCE. I wouldn't treat them as acute patients because I'd see acute patients also. And I also see work conditioning patients. But for the PT patients, I'll call those, I could do FCE for back. I do FCE for knees. I do work conditioning for shoulders, knees. Like I think the fireman was a knee. I've had police officers for knees and stuff like that. I try to go outside of my clinic for therapy when the weather is nice and use things outside, the uneven terrain, jumping fences. We've done a lot of different things in the area if we can in the therapy, but I do treat different areas. Just for hand therapists looking, if you don't have access to a work conditioning program, some of the things just to start thinking for yourself, the hand therapists are so into the hand itself and all the mechanics of the hand is take it one step farther. What does that person need to do with that hand? Okay. And what can I do to maybe help them? If you can get just a bucket, or I do a big thing with milk jugs. I bring milk jugs in from home because a full milk jug is 9 pounds. A half is 4.5 pounds. I do a lot of sending milk jugs home with people. You're going to walk around with this. So it's 9 pounds. You're going to pick it up off the floor. You're going to move it. So some of the other hand therapists are doing that. You just get a bucket and bring in a bucket to your clinic, or some things that you can think of to try to do your own, helping your patient get to that next level. I don't know if everyone has access to a work conditioning program somewhere or knows someone, but if you can take that extra little step before you let them go, because people have things to do, or you're going to kind of lose track of them. So maybe you could at least get started on some of the stuff. When the person tells you, I have to lift this at work and it weighs whatever, in a box, different things like that. For my home exercise program, for my patients, I have them do things at home. They're not always the acute hand exercises and the tendon glides and all that. A home exercise program is, I'll tell the guy he has to cut his grass. And then when he comes back in the next day, I ask him if he cut the grass. Things like that, I have them do things at home as their home exercise program.
You should make him come and cut your grass. Let that be his home exercise program.
Well, I'll tell you a story. Long time ago, I had a patient who was in an auto accident and he was a wallpaper. He worked independently and he had to hang wallpaper. I just moved into a new clinic before I worked where I am now. And I wanted this man to hang wallpaper in the clinic. And they had a fit. They said, no. I said, he'll take it down and wash the walls, all this kind of stuff. They said, no. So I set it up. He came to my house. And so he came to my house and I let him in the bathroom and I had him strip my bathroom and rehang the wallpaper just because I needed to see if this guy could go back as an independent worker to do that.
Absolutely. As well justified.
Yes. I have a laundry system in my clinic. I can have people do laundry. I don't know why, but everyone says they can't lift a laundry basket. I don't know what they put in them, but and no one can lift a laundry basket, but now they can. So, but anything that you can use in our clinic, I have a kitchen in my clinic. I got an order for an FCE and the man was going to be leaving in a week to go to Australia to be a cook. And he had a hand injury and the doctor wanted to know if he could do everything. I went up to Kroger's. I bought every hard vegetable I could find and knives and what have you. And part of his FCE was doing all the cooking, cutting, and chopping during his FCE. I'll put job stimulation in my FCEs if I can say that that person could do that then.
So I have a question. I know it's easy to get a workman's comp patient covered in work hardening or industrial rehab. How do you get around and provide the treatment for those patients that are injured at home but are unable to work, but they need a component of that work task simulation to be able to get back to work?
And the therapist will send that patient over to me also, and I do an advanced strengthening program. So then I'll put those patients on the BTE. I'll do the same lifting. And then in my note writing, I'll put advanced ADLs because people have to lift at home, let alone lift at work. So I can also concentrate on what they do at work and also cross it over to what people need to do at home. Because sometimes the insurance company gets fussy when they read the notes about why are you doing this. Part of a person's life is taking care of their house. So if you have to paint and you have to cut your grass and you have to do your snow blowing, you know, all those things are in like an advanced therapy. I'll put those people on the BTE. All acute patients might not go on the BTE, but we try to use the BTE as much as we can for all of our hand patients. Mm-hmm. We have a pretty good program overall. It seems to cover quite a bit when we can get it working. But insurance does a lot. Depends what the insurance company is okaying.
Yeah, like you had mentioned before, they would be there for 6-8 hours. And insurances 20 some years ago did not blink at paying that bill at all. And then now, if you can get 2 hours covered sometimes, you're pretty lucky.
And 6 visits isn't anything. I mean, depending on how injury is, and then you have to beg for more therapy after 6 visits. And I don't like when a person is home in limbo. So the hard part is they say 6 visits and then we'll let you know. And then there's a couple of the person sitting at home for a week, week and a half, not getting any therapy because they're waiting on more authorization.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Kim, is there anything else that you would like to share with us about this special area that you work in?
Yeah, I mean, I do say the combination of the psych and the, you know, helps with the industry rehab a lot. People need to get back to work. And so a lot of people want to go back to work. So we need to be able to do whatever we can to help someone resume. And I always call it their previous level activity. So you're going to work. What else do you want to do? I was on a bowling team. I was on a softball team. So I add that to the whole program to make the whole person not just concentrate on just their work. Like I had a lady one time, she says, I want to get back to needlepointing in bowling. I said, all right, you bring in your needlepoint and your bowling ball. And after so much therapy for 15 minutes, you can do your needlepoint. I'll watch how you do it. I've had people throw their bowling balls up and down the hallway. So we've done a lot of that type of things, which they're not always a job, but it's part of a person's life.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's meaningful to them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Kim. I really appreciate it. And I think the listeners are going to enjoy this episode.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Hands in Motion brought to you by the American Society of Hand Therapists. You can listen on the ASHT website and or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple, Google, Amazon Music, and Spotify. Once subscribed, please rate and review the podcast to help us reach new listeners and continue offering valuable, relevant content.
You've been listening to Hands in Motion, brought to you by the American Society of Hand Therapists. To learn more about ASHT and to subscribe to the show, please visit ASHT.org. We'll see you next time on the Hands in Motion podcast.